This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia on the American workforce in crisis.
I think a lot of the protections that you'd want workers to have are in place. They're either up and running or they're about to be launched.
Many of the employees who are still working are doing so from home, which means, counterintuitively, a lot of them are slacking. CEO of the messaging app Slack on his platform in a pandemic.
Even as the, you know, have this surge in new users, the average utilization per user is also massively increasing.
And the CEO of New Jersey's largest health network on what's to come in the battle against COVID-19.
We're holding our own. We're certainly encouraged that there seems to be a little bit of early light at the end of the tunnel.
It's Tuesday, April 7th, 2020. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
First up today on the podcast, jobs on America's Main Street. Many of the 10 million plus workers who have newly filed for unemployment benefits in the last few weeks worked at small businesses. $350 billion from the government's $2 trillion coronavirus relief package have been dedicated to the Paycheck Protection Program for businesses with 500 employees or fewer. Launched on Friday, it's gotten off to a bit of a rocky start. Many entrepreneurs report being turned away from banks or being stuck in the process. Applications in, but no funds dispersed. The Trump administration told CNBC late Monday there have been 175,000 loans assigned an SBA loan number with a value around $50 billion. And the National Federation of Independent Businesses is out today with its latest report on Main Street sentiment. It shows a drop of 8.1 points in March to 96.4. That is the largest monthly drop in the survey's history, which dates back to 1973. Today on Squawk Box, we spoke to the U.S. Secretary of Labor, Eugene Scalia. Here's Joe Kernan.
Mr. Secretary, it's good to see you this morning. I want to start with, I don't know whether you get to, you're probably busy, but, you know, we're locked at home. I watch these task force updates, and I have seen the president more than a couple of times just really take issue with the way questions are phrased by people in the room about the lending facility to small businesses. And he wants them to say, gosh, what a great program. I know there's a couple of glitches, but what a great program. They seem focused on, wow, this is just a mess and nobody is, it's not working at all. Where's the real answer? What's the truth in what's happening now? Is it, it's tough to roll it out. Has it been done smoothly and is it working the way it should?
Well, first of all, I think it's a great program, a great idea. You know, the fundamental concept here is that we're putting our economy on pause to beat the virus. We want to keep workers attached to their employer, and this small business program incentivizes that. As you know, it gives you a loan, and the loan's forgivable in large part, provided you keep your workers on payroll. That's the concept. Let's keep these thriving businesses intact so that once the virus is beat, we can spring back quickly to the very strong economy we had. I think it's very impressive how quickly this got stood up. The billions of dollars a day, I think billions of dollars an hour in loans that have come through. So I think the program is, it's up, it's running, it's running well. Nothing put up this quickly is going to be perfect in every way, but I think it's a very good program that's running well.
Do you think that the small businesses that are worried that that if they don't, I know you've got to, I think you have to have your taxes done. It is difficult, I think, to get all your ducks in a row if you're a small business, probably. Should they worry about funds running out? And do you think that it'll be replenished? That's not going to be an issue?
Well, I mean, let me say first, it's a sign of what a good program it is and how well it's working in these early days that one of the questions you hear most frequently is, should we expand it? And, you know, we'll see. I think the president has indicated his support, enthusiasm for the program. And I think it's widely believed that there's great value in enabling companies, particularly small business, which employs just about half of American workers. There's a lot of value in keeping these businesses intact during this, we hope, short period of time so they can spring back. Whether it needs to be funded more, we'll see. But I think we really want to make this program work so that we can rebound to the kind of economy we had just a few weeks ago.
Do you think that by putting all these things into practice from phase three. Are there things missing that are needed in a phase four at this point, do you think? Could you come up with three or four things that we might have added or done differently and that should be done if there is a phase four?
I think what stands out about phase three is how many of the really important bases are being covered now. I mean, we've been talking about the small business program to help keep small businesses afloat and keep them attached to their workers. We've got these paychecks or IRS payments that will be coming to individual Americans within a week or two now, $1,200 an American plus $500 for dependent children. And then the very generous unemployment insurance program that's been put in place, too. So when I look at the third bill as well, of course, of the paid leave entitlements in the second bill, I think a lot of the protections that you'd want workers to have are in place. They're either up and running or they're about to be launched. And so I think we're, from the perspective of getting the economy back up again, in a good place right now. But let's keep our eyes open to see if there's something more we need to do.
Any anecdotal evidence of just the perception of things not being totally fair in terms of the way the banks administer things? Do they help certain customers more than others? Would you expect that type of? Yes, it's never perfect, and you could actually see something that looks like that. Maybe it really isn't, but there are no bad actors at this point, in your view?
Well, look, I don't know every detail of that program, and I'm not going to say there's not a bad actor across the entire landscape of our economy. But again, I think what stands out about the program is how quickly it got stood up, strong interest there is in the program. And how quickly loans are being processed in it. I think that's a really good sign for what the economy might look like 2-3 months from now, because demand on the program suggests that you've got a lot of small business people trying to hold on to that business, trying to hold on to their workers so they can be up and running quickly. And I think that's all good news.
I mean, you are presiding over the most tumultuous period in maybe in history in terms of the U.S. labor market. Do you see positive signs, or are you positive about when we're finally through all this, that we can get back to what percentage of normalcy where we were in terms of the labor market? Would you be pleased with 75, 85? Do you think 95% or and when will that happen in your view? And it's just a daunting prospect, given that we're right in the middle of this, though. I understand that, Mr. Secretary, but what do you think about the future?
Let's aim for 110%. I mean, you're right. It's been just a wild swing in, a six-week period. We put out our jobs report early in March. It was just an extremely strong jobs report. 275,000 jobs had been created in February. Unemployment, 3.5% again, which was that 50-year low. And then we put out a couple jobs reports last week with a very, very high unemployment number. So it's been a really big swing. But what gives me confidence is how strong the economy was. We had policies that were working. Those policies remain in place. And now we need Americans, and it's not easy, but to exercise the kind of discipline and social distancing and the like that the president and public health authorities are asking for. And then we get back to work. And I think those policies that gave us the economy we were enjoying, they're still there. We still got President Trump's leadership. So these are the things that give me confidence in our ability to bounce back. And remember, these numbers that we're seeing, the unemployment numbers, they're high and they're painful for millions of Americans. But it's self-imposed. These numbers are different than we typically see where there's some serious underlying flaw in the economy. That's not what brought us to this point right now. And that also gives me some confidence that we can spring back quickly.
On September 30th, 2019, as you were taking the oath, I just can't imagine. I mean, when looking back on that, you couldn't have had any idea of what was in front of you. It looked like a pretty good job probably at that point. Things are going swimmingly. But how things can change. Mr. Secretary, we appreciate your coming on this morning and updating us, though.
Pleasure being with you.
Good luck. And we hope for we're hoping for 110% too. Maybe 115. Anyway, thanks.
Next on Squawk Pod, working from home or slacking? How about both? Office messaging app Slack is seeing over a billion active minutes a day between its global users in light of worldwide stay-at-home efforts.
It's up by 2 full hours in New York, so up to 12.2 hours a day on average now for time connected.
Slack CEO Stuart Butterfield is right after this. This is Squawk Pod with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. If you swapped your office desk for your living room couch during this pandemic, you've probably also swapped face-to-face interaction with your colleagues for some kind of internal messaging service. For the Squawk team and for thousands of other teams around the world, that service is Slack. In fact, from February 1st through the last week of March, Slack saw 9,000 new paid customers. That's up 80% from the preceding two quarters. The platform has seen a 20% increase in the number of messages sent per day. And overall, users around the world are spending more than a billion active minutes per weekday on Slack. That sounds like my day. This week, the messaging app filed plans to raise $600 million through convertible debt notes due in 2025. They ended up raising that to $750 million overnight. This is the company's first long-term debt, although to some, it's a surprising time to announce it. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin kicking off the conversation with Slack CEO Stuart Butterfield.
Stuart, good morning to you. We actually reported the news yesterday on the show that you were looking to raise $600 million. You've raised more than that in a convertible bond. Explain why you did that and what happened.
Sure. We upped it to $750 million. It was oversubscribed. There's a lot of interest, which is interesting experience for us, you know, with the entire investment community working from home. So we did probably a lot easier than doing the roadshow with the physical meeting. So we got to do that starting early yesterday morning. Ended up in a position where there was 150 investors expressing interest. So some of our existing investors, some new ones, and really great response.
And so what was the purpose of doing that now? I know some investors who looked at it and saw this as being opportunistic in terms of trying to get ahead of things now. Other people I know raised questions and said, are people not paying their monthly subscription fee?
No, it's definitely opportunistic. I mean, I think that we're not immune to the overall macroeconomic conditions, but the initial response for Slack has been a massive surge in interest. And I think in any scenario, I feel confident that we're going to come out relatively advantaged. And we really want to press that advantage. We really want to be in a position to be cash rich. And we've run the company that way from the beginning. We have, you know, 700 plus million on the balance sheet already. So this is about doubling that, and had already guided, and we're trying to be reasonable and prudent with our guidance, but we had already guided to cash flow breakeven at the high end.
What are you seeing right now in terms of customers? I imagine there's lots of people who are jumping on the platform. Are there other customers who've either been on the platform before saying, I either can't afford it, so I need to get off the platform, or asking for some kind of, delayed payment?
Yeah, I mean, we're not especially exposed, but we have customers who are in travel and hospitality, booking services, you know, almost all startups, as you know, are Slack users, almost all technology companies. So there is a little bit of that, and we're starting to see some signal on the SMB side, but we expect that to probably decline over the course of the year. I think that's balanced by some really accelerated rollouts at large enterprises, and just, you know, we reported this earlier, but 9,000 new paid teams on net over the course of the quarter so far, and that's compared to a normal rate of about 5,000. So up 80% with the quarter still having a few weeks left.
Right. And how are you thinking and seeing your market share versus Microsoft Teams, which I know is your big competitor, and any other big competitors out there during this period?
We're not really seeing competitors show up so much here. I mean, I think that you have seen a massive spike in Teams usage, but it's for what people tend to use Teams for, which is voice and video calling. We actually announced an integration with Teams calling features last week. Who knows? It could be 3 months ago at this point because the time dilation, but very recently. Almost all of our large enterprise customers are Office 365 customers, so that was very well received.
Right. For those of us who are all working at home on Slack,
You get to see the other side of it. Hopefully there's privacy settings so you don't see the true other side of it. What are the great lessons of this period for you, both as a business person, but as someone who's been working on Slack and seeing this all happen in real time?
Yeah, it's been very, very dramatic. So I mentioned the net new paid customers. Obviously, we've also seen a big increase in new signups, so people who are brand new to Slack, expansion inside of our existing customers, existing user base, really accelerated rollouts. But also, even as have this surge in new users, the average utilization per user is also massively increasing. And we see that all over the world. Up 25% in New York for messages sent per user per day, 29% in London, 42% in Paris. And people are also spending a lot more time connected to the service. So that doesn't necessarily mean active usage, but it's up by 2 full hours in New York. So up to 12.2 hours a day on average now for time connected.
The other question I was going to ask you is, as we're all doing this, a lot of us are going on Zoom and other things. I know that has an integration with yours. But there have become additional privacy concerns, not necessarily about Slack, but I'm curious about your thoughts about what's happened actually at Zoom, given that you now have people trying to pop into some of these calls that are not supposed to be on these calls, and sometimes even showing video of things that, let's just say, are not work safe.
Yeah, I think that massive surges in interest can definitely be a double-edged sword. They're a great partner of us and well integrated. So I mean, I think there's some good news for that company, really massive rollouts. But managing for the consumer internet is very different than the enterprise, and they think they're probably scrambling to keep up with all of that.
Is there any great service that you started using during this period? I know you've probably been more of a distributed remote worker yourself, given what your product does. But is there any new app that our audience should know about? Maybe not a Slack app that you're using or hearing people use that's different?
So I'm struggling to think of ones that I've heard because there's been a whole bunch of them. A lot of different kind of video services, so not necessarily for calling. One that I've started using lately is called Loom, L-O-O-M. It's great for recording short videos to share internally, and those can be with screen recordings or just the video. It's a great way to kind of point things out. And I'm a frequent reporter of bugs in our own software. So it's a great way to point things out without having to point at the screen with someone in real time.
Okay. Stuart, always good to see you. I've become a big fan, by the way, of something called Marco Polo. I don't know if you know Polo.
Yeah, that's a great app.
It's been great for keeping the family all together. It's asynchronous. It's like asynchronous FaceTime of sorts for those out there who are didn't know about it. I didn't know about it until just recently. Anyway, Stuart, congratulations on the fundraising, and we hope to talk to you soon. Stay safe and healthy out there.
Great to see you. Thank you.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, optimism after a New Jersey hospital passes a grim milestone. We speak to the CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health.
We're hoping, we're not getting too happy quite yet, but we're hoping that we're starting to see that top of the curve.
Back after this. You're listening to Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
We continue to track the coronavirus crisis in the U.S. As a society, right? And here too, as well. New Jersey hit a grim milestone yesterday as the number of COVID-19 deaths passed 1,000. For more on the battle against the virus, let's welcome Robert Garrett, CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, New Jersey's largest health network, which includes 17 hospitals. And is it Dr. Garrett, sir?
No, Bob Garrett's fine, Joe. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. How's the system holding up out of the 17? I'm sure would you characterize it as bursting at the seams yet, but still under control or under control or just chaos? How would you characterize it? And I know there's 17 different hospitals we're talking about.
Yeah, I would characterize it as at we're getting close to full capacity. We've seen 4,000 positive COVID-19 cases. Out of those 4,000, many of them were hospitalized, and 40% of all hospitalized patients end off in the ICU, and then 80% of those in the ICU end off on a ventilator. So what we've done is we've expanded capacity at Hackensack Meridian. The Department of Health in New Jersey, under Governor Murphy's leadership, has asked us to double our ICU capacity. We've done that at each of our 17 hospitals. And as a matter of fact, at Hackensack University Medical Center, which is our flagship hospital up in northern New Jersey, we've actually tripled our ICU capacity, and we've converted an entire cafeteria into a patient care unit, adding 72 beds. Our supply line continues to hold. It's been very, very tight. We've had to source equipment and supplies literally from around the world. We're very grateful. We've received over 200 ventilators from the national stockpile, which has helped. And we've also had to repurpose staff, reassigning staff to critical areas. We've called up retired doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, and others. And we've had to use agency nurses that we've had to source really from around the country. But I would say right now we're holding our own. We're certainly encouraged that there seems to be a little bit of early light at the end of the tunnel, in that curve that everybody's been talking about is it looks like it's starting to flatten. The number of new cases each day were in the double digits. There were about 35% increase every 24 hours about a week ago. These last few days, they've been in the single digits. So we're hoping we're not getting, too too happy quite yet, but we're hoping that we're starting to see that that top of the curve.
Bob, is New Jersey on the same path, you would say, as New York City, or just slightly behind New York City? You're seeing the same type of positive trends very early that New York is, or is New Jersey? I had the perception it was just behind New York by a couple of days. Are we splitting hairs too finely here?
No, I think you're absolutely correct, Joe. I would say it's the northern part of the state of New Jersey is probably just a couple days behind New York, very, very close to New York City. And as you go further south in New Jersey, it's probably more like days and even a week behind where New York is. But we're encouraged. There's more testing going on than there was at the beginning. We're doing a lot of testing at Hackensack Meridian Health, and we're prioritizing our healthcare workers as well as inpatients.
Every single time we talk to someone, we need to just marvel at the courage and the resolve of people that their sole purpose really in life. Their sole purpose in life really is helping people without really considering their own health, which is I just marvel at it every day. Anyway, Robert Garrett, CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, and I know that's where it's headquartered, Becky. But I know you're pretty close to Hackensack, so you have a good in your home, so you have a good idea of that area. But so the northern New Jersey, kind of almost mirroring New York, but showing some positive signs, and then maybe South Jersey a little bit behind. But all in all, I don't know. Is it too early to hope that none of our states swamp the ventilator issue? That's what we've all been worried about all along, and that would be a big relief if we knew that everyone who needed one would be able to get one if we bend the curve enough, Beck.
Yeah, you know, Joe, the thing that I think it really says to me is that social distancing is working. So all these sacrifices that people are making by staying home, I think, are paying off. And again, our incredible thanks to the healthcare workers who are continuing to go on the front lines of all of this. But social distancing works.
Incredible.
Stay home, and let's see how we can play this out.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. You can subscribe to Squawk Pod on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast app to get us in your feed every day. And please keep tuning in. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.